Before we get to the ending stuff, I do suppose we should talk a little bit about combat.
Yes, there's that too.
When I played the demo, I didn't really like the combat. Honestly, I found when I was in cover and I was trying to get out of it, I'd constantly roll toward each corner, and that was so frustrating. And just the rolling around the melee, it took a bit to get used to, but now I found that I really enjoy the combat and utilizing the different weapons, trying to figure out which would work the best for certain missions. And I've been playing multiplayer lately, and the combat is quite tight there as well. There's certain restrictions, but the combat transferred very well from the single player to the multiplayer, and I've been playing with Griffin a lot. Well, not a lot, but I've played with him a few times, and it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the multi. It's funny because I actually never had any intention. So let me backtrack here and say that I never played the demo because I was far too terrified of getting spoiled, and also I knew that obviously my favorite character, depending on what sort of shepherd that you start with, you see him in the first scene, so I didn't want to spoil myself for Caden's magnificent appearance. So I didn't play the demo. I was not, you know, really all that familiar with the combat besides what I'd seen in the trailers, you know, with the whole combat rolling, which I thought looked really cool, and the melee attacks I was very excited about. And just to go really quickly to the multiplayer aspect, I never had any intentions of actually playing the multiplayer, but then I gave it a shot, and I don't know what it is, because even though the levels are the same levels over and over again, I am just completely hooked. Mm-hmm. And I do not play Mass Effect for the combat. Yeah. I play it for the characters and for the storyline, and I enjoy the combat, but it's like a secondary thing compared to everything else in the games. Yeah. So the fact that I am just so completely addicted to the multiplayer, I can't really explain it.
It's fun to play with your friends, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's a definite
thing. That's what I was
thing.
Looking forward to. I'm sorry that I can't play with you PC guys, but
sad.
I know, but I've never been a big multiplayer player, but I find that I can just easily hop in there for a quick match with complete strangers sometimes and just be like, hey, what's up, guys? Okay, awesome. Like, It was really easy to get the hang of it, and I'm finding that I'm surprisingly kicking some serious butt on it, and I really didn't think I was going to.
I think it's even making me better in the single player campaign, because also it's making me experiment more with different techniques, tactics, and weapons
and different classes and
Yeah, exactly. So it's a nice way to ease into this new class experience.
And the fact that it's cooperative is, you know,
I think
makes it a lot better that you're not running around trying to kill each other. You're actually trying to, you know, you all have a common goal. So, you know, a lot of multiplayer experiences and another, you know, shooting games is
so predatory.
It's very predatory. You know, you know, you're chasing after people, you're killing them, you know, you're dominating them. It's all about, you know, I own the map, you know, I'm the king. And this one is this, you know, wait, he's in trouble. I'm going to try to run over and help you. And
I like that.
I have a teammate. You know, like it makes like a bond between, you know, total strangers. You know, like which makes it a lot more fun for me.
Yeah, as whereas with normal multiplayer, it's basically me spawning, getting shot in the head, or like getting stuck on a wall and then blowing myself up with my own grenade. Like it just happens.
Sounds like me and ME3 trying to play a soldier.
Joe, I know that you're a big Halo fan, so I'm assuming you've played Halo Reach.
Oh, yes.
I played it briefly. I got up to I think it was a warrant officer before I had to return the game. But did you find that in Halo it was much more about every man for himself versus with the Mass Effect experience? I mean, with both Reach and Mass Effect, you still there's still competition that the person there's after you finish the mission, there's the person at the top who has all the medals and all the experience. But I've never felt as useless in Mass Effect as I do in Reach.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are you know cooperative game types in Halo and you know Call of Duty and all those other games, mm-hmm. but you know, like the main focus of in multiplayer in those games is you know deathmatch, you know, killing the other team, killing the other player, you know, it's all very, you know, player versus player. You know, this is mm-hmm. you know, this is all the players versus you know a bunch of bad guys. Mm-hmm. So, which is something that I'm a lot more comfortable with. You know, I've played a lot of multiplayer in Halo, you know, and I've played a lot of deathmatch, and you know, even when I was doing well, I never really. It was never a, you know, a very
team effort.
Yeah, it wasn't rewarding. You know, like the multiplayer in Mass Effect kind of rewards teamwork in a way that a lot of other games don't. And this is just a first try. You know, like I'm very interested to see what BioWare can do with the more, you know, when they you know learn all the mistakes that they've made in this game. You know, where can this go from here? You know, it's very interesting. You know, to think about what they can do in their next game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'd be interested to see that as well.
And I like most of the combat in Mass Effect 1. The combat was what it was, and it was you know it wasn't really about the combat, but it worked fine. You know, and then Mass Effect 2 came along, and I thought they really nailed it. They sort of mm-hmm. took all the, they tightened everything up, and I think there wasn't a whole lot of improvement that they could have done from 2 to 3, even though they did improve some things. Go ahead.
I really don't mean to interrupt you.
It's okay.
I keep thinking people are done, and then I jump in. I really think that they have perfected the combat in Mass Effect 3, mostly because for some of my characters, they are biotics.
And yes, biotics!
Yes, in Mass Effect 2, they were put off to the wayside. I couldn't use certain powers because of barriers or what have you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I had to rely on my gun the whole time, and I got really pissed off sometimes. But with this one, I found that, you know, when you're a biotic, you're a human weapon. So I'm just throwing warps and shockwaves left and right, and I'm just so happy. And then when those are cooling down, I use my gun and then go right back to using my powers. So it was, you know, I didn't care about the combat in Mass Effect 1 and 2, but it's very enjoyable for me in 3. And I'd say before my enjoyment was just with the story. I wanted to hurry through it and get to the story, but now I kind of like the combat. Then again, I'm still playing on casual and normal, so I might be at a bit of an advantage on that front.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I typically play the Mass Effect games on casual or normal.
Yeah, me too.
The first time, typically casual, just because, you know, I like to not have to reload constantly until I get to the next conversation.
Yes, that's my big thing. I don't like to redo shit.
Yeah, exactly. especially because occasionally the autosave, you know, sometimes you might forget to quick save, and then the autosave is at the beginning of the mission again, and so, you know, casual is a nice option for those who want to take advantage of that. But, my God, playing an adept in ME3, it was amazing. It was amazing. I love it so much. It's like, 1, 2, 1, 2, you know, and then like, shockwave. Oh, my God, it's fantastic. I love that. I love that so much. And then in the first one, I ended up actually picking I think it was Slam, which I enjoyed using a lot in ME2 as, you know, my extra power. But now I'm on my second playthrough now, trying to steal myself because I'm almost ready to go to London. And I don't know if I can stand some of the conversations that you have there without weeping desperately on my couch for another week. Which is almost literally what I did after I finished the game the first time around, instantly. In my second playthrough, I chose Carnage as my squad power, and my god, thank you, Jimmy Vega, you are a star, and my god, Carnage is just incredible, especially on a casual.
We just called
Carnage is awesome.
James Vega Lats around here. Hey, Lats.
That's okay. There's one thing that I did want to say about the combat, and something that I'm a little bit disappointed in, is that I do agree that the biotic style has really, really, really improved in the third one. And you actually, when you're using biotic powers, they have that kick to them, you know, and they feel like they're actual powers.
Yeah,
full
biotic kick.
Yeah, exactly. Full biotic. Which is upcoming in the next few days. So everybody needs to watch out for the save game site, because it's something very important that's going to be up there in a couple of days. Anyway. But
Shadow Broker Tini,
the chief. But getting back to the combat, as much as I loved the improvements to the biotics, and I think that was absolutely fantastic, I was really, really, really disappointed with what happened with the soldier. Because I'm sorry, but soldier just feels like it's nothing now, because you are penalized for actually taking all of the guns that you used to take because of the charges for the rest of your group. Yes. And, you know, there's no, I suppose, motivation to play soldier now.
Yeah.
Because you can only take, like, two guns.
And that's so stupid as a soldier, because that's the whole, you know, benefit of playing a soldier, to be able to have access to
weapons. Yeah, I feel like for this one they were just like, well, everybody can use everything now, so basically you're all soldiers. Plus, people get other special powers.
Exactly. Exactly.
I just melee'd through most things because, you know, John gets cranky and just does that.
You just like to listen to him go, ugh, in there.
I can't really deny that. So.
I think I might be the only person who didn't like, you know, that special melee move. I never remembered that I had it, and on the rare occasions that I did use it, it has such a huge wind-up that by the time you unleash it, the character's already, you know, your enemy's already moved off, and it's usually, I always end up missing.
I did that a lot.
Here's my shepherd doing this crazy, you know, ninja move to thin air, you know, I kind of felt embarrassed, like the other squad mates were looking at me like, boy,
like,
you know.
Whiff!
Yeah, whiff again, you know, strike three, you're out.
Like, oh, dude. No, just don't. So, here's the gun. It's okay.
The Omni Blade was an Omni fail for me.
Joe, what's your what class do you typically play? Infiltrator?
I played Soldier. Annika was a Soldier all the way through.
I thought she was an Infiltrator.
You were Biotic.
No, I was always Soldier.
Nice.
Since I had to redo her anyway in the third one, I took the opportunity to make her into a Sentinel.
Ooh, that's going to be my next playthroughs.
Which really worked well with Liara, because I could, you know, Liara had the Singularity, so I gave Annika a throw, so I can, you know, do like the whole, you know, biotic detonations and stuff, so I got really addicted to that. But I'm totally in agreement with Tosh about what they did to Soldier, because I played it for a little while, and I'm like, this is stupid. Like, you know, they're punishing me for playing the way I always have.
Yeah.
So.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think probably a large part of why, for me at least, my ME1 Soldier playthrough was so forgettable is just that and this is absolutely on me, so I'm not going to blame BioWare for this, but I had just gotten so used to, you know, even playing a Vanguard, just using my pistol, that I found myself, and I just enjoy using the pistol so much that I basically consistently did that throughout my entire Soldier playthrough, and I never felt any kind of inclination to try other weapons beyond that, and especially not the SMG, because the kickback annoys me too much, so I never really bothered with that in ME2, but then, you know, I don't know, I mean, then now I kind of want to give Soldier a shot, just to see how, you know, what that's really like in ME3, and I mean, that sounds really rough. That's not fair. I do think it's really absurd that BioWare just unlocked the types of weapons to every. I mean, that just to me completely contradicts canon, where, you know, obviously if you play an adept in ME1, you can only use a pistol. Which, to me, makes kind of sense. And, you know, certainly the other squad mates who do not have, you know, they can't just, I don't know, I mean, you know, I just thought it was really silly to suddenly see Kaden being able to use an assault rifle.
I was sad they took Ashley's shotgun away.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yes, Chief Boomstick!
They named her after Ashley Williams from Evil Dead 2, and
took away a shotgun.
And then they took away
her
boomstick. That just seems mean.
Definitely. And, you know, I don't... For me, Ashley was always canon with a shotgun, because it makes sense.
Me too.
You know?
I had her with a shotgun or an assault rifle.
I don't see her with a sniper rifle, which suddenly she now has the ability to use, you know?
Really?
Weird!
Oh, I would totally have pegged her for an assault rifle and a shotgun.
I wonder to what extent we associate characters with their weapons, too, because with Garrus, I always imagine he has some sort of, you know, sniper rifle collection.
Sniper rifle, absolutely. Yeah, and
Rex and shotgun.
Yep, and for Kaden, I mean, based on the Game Informer picture, which I totally do not have framed on my wall or anything
I totally want
holding a shotgun. So, you know, to me, I thought, okay, well, then that's kind of, or maybe an SMG. So I thought, okay, well, that's sort of Miranda-ish. Where he's gonna have a pistol and either shotgun, which I can deal with because Vanguard, even though he's not a Vanguard, or pistol and SMG like Miranda. But then for him to have an assault rifle, which, you know, you guys know for obvious reasons, to me it's just absolutely hilarious. But, I mean...
What do I do with this?
I would totally buy...
You don't know how to use that!
I'd totally buy a Kaden poster.
Check. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Kim will start marketing them if she has the ability to.
Just make Kaden clones.
By any chance, you happen to be listening to this, there are Kaden fans out there, and they will totally shell out for some merchandise.
Yes,
Kaden,
I would
wallpapers.
Or Ashley picture, too. I would totally have the two of them together in a poster, and I would frame it on my wall.
Kaden and Ashley?
Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it, and they decided they were going to have the comic books, and so they were, yeah, you're going to get to see how, like, all the homeworlds, you're going to get to see what all these characters were doing. And by the way, here's James Vega. Great, that's cool, he's new, we need to know all about him. And like, oh, look, Tally.
Garrus. Tally. I'm sure Garrus will be next, and then be like, okay, we're done with this now. That's
yeah. I could see them doing another one for Liara, but that's really it. Of course, you know.
Well, actually,
Liara already got Shadow Broker and the comics.
But you know, actually, I'm glad we got back to Liara because I wanted to ask something. I wanted to ask Joe something because for me, Mass Effect 1, Liara was there and she was a good character, and you got to know a little bit about her. Mass Effect 2, you got to know a little bit about her more, but it was different to what you learnt from the first one, and it was there was a little bit of a disconnect. But for Mass Effect 3, I mean, she's so involved. In a lot of the scenes in the Normandy. And I think it's for the better because you really do get to know Liara. And there's some really touching scenes with Liara. And one of my favorite scenes in Mass Effect 3 is when she comes in with that little beacon and talks to your shepherd. And you can decide, you know, how that conversation plays out. And it's just a really lovely scene.
Yeah.
And so I suppose I want to ask Rats, Joe, you know, for you as a Liara fan, did you feel that in 3 she sort of came into her own element and she became more of a character than she had been in the previous two?
I think so, yeah. She was definitely, you know, she felt more real, you know, and then she felt like a real person. I think that goes for all the characters, all the major characters anyway. I like that they brought, you know, her back into her scientific roots, you know, like she got to, you know, learn about the Protheans and all that stuff. And, she wasn't this, you know, this person consumed with revenge that she was in the second game. I really enjoyed what they did with her character. Mention, you know, that scene where she comes in and gives you, that time capsule, was, you know, like you said, it's a wonderful scene. I would have liked, if there was a little bit extra, if you romanced her, you know, like there's no extra dialogue in that scene. It plays out the same, regardless. but you know, I really, really enjoyed, you know, the vast majority of her content, you know, and I when I learned that she was going to be back, you know, as a full time squad mate, I was just overjoyed. So yeah, I mean, I really don't have any real complaints as far as her you know, role in the game is.
I have a question.
I envy you.
I have another question, I guess, for you, Joe. I'm not sure if this is a glitch or not, but did you find in the middle of the game, like after the Udina coup, when you talked with her on the Citadel, you can, and she's talking about growing up on Armali, on Thessia? Do you remember that conversation? Did you find that you felt cut? Maybe it's just my game, but were you kind of friend-zoned until you reconfirmed the relationship?
Well, yeah, that's,
awkward.
There's a conversation late where you have to kind of tell her, like, look, I want to be more than friends. And it's like, it was very awkward for me, since my shepherd romanced her in the first game, stayed loyal through the second game, and it took me right out of the moment. Like, what do you mean you want to be? What are you talking about, friends, Liara? Like, I've known you for 3 years. You know, she was definitely friend zoned, and it was interesting because the BioWare writer who wrote her for Mass Effect 3 actually came in and commented on it, because there were a lot of Liara fans on BSN talking about it, and she was like, oh yeah, I guess that. That was kind of strange, wasn't it? Her defense of that, of you know, friend zoning, you know, as it was, is because they wanted to give new players an opportunity to back out of the romance if they had done it by accident. Hmm. So they wanted to give them one last chance to say, "Oh no, never mind, I don't want to be in a romance with you."
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things where, you know, long-time fans of the series, you know, once again have to just kind of go like, huh, well, that's kind of strange. Mm-hmm. While new fans really wouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
So I have a question, because so romancing Kaden with my imported femme shep, who is romancing every single time and always stayed loyal to him. And this is actually one of the things that I absolutely adored about the Kaden romance, and that to me completely fits his character, is that he makes no, you know, he doesn't try to hide the fact how much he cares for Shepard. And from the very beginning, you know, obviously with that heart-wrenching look after Shepard, you know, in Vancouver in the Alliance headquarters, to, you know, the mission on Mars, and the way that he refers to Shepard as someone he, you know, loves or, you know, cared deeply about, it's very clear that, you know, if you do import a shepherd who romanced him and stayed loyal to him, it's, you know, it's obvious that he still has feelings for your shepherd. Mm-hmm. So it does, and then, you know, even then you get, obviously, to the point where you have the Citadel date, and then, you know, again, you kind of get this confession of love, and obviously you can say that you want to keep it professional, or you can, you know, continue this, like, absolutely fantastic dialogue, but so it... Does Liara have similar comments where she's basically clearly stating that, you know, she has feelings and has had feelings for you this whole time, and then you still end up later on in the game having to try to sneak out of the friend zone?
Yeah, there's as soon as you run into her on Mars, you know, if you had romanced her in the past, you know, the interactions change right away. I mean, they're much more, you know, they're much more intimate. They're, you know, they're flirting with each other. There's a scene, you know, early on where you tell her that, you know, I don't think I can do this without you, and she kisses you on the forehead and calls you a flatterer. And there's a you know, a lot of romantic stuff, and you think everything is going great, and then, like Keller said, like 2/3 of the way through, it just kind of stops. You get this weird conversation where she's like, you know, you're such a good friend, Shepard. And
thanks.
Okay. Like,
not very subtle.
I want to be more than friends. It is very strange. But I mean, there is a lot of romantic content. The writers did a a great job, I think, except for that one.
Yeah, that one conversation.
That one really bizarre conversation.
Well, I thought it's not even. Just with Liara, when you're talking with her mother, and Shepard calls her, he calls her my girl. He says, nobody messes with my girl. And my heart just palpitated. It's like, oh my gosh, that's so sweet. And just a little.
I loved that conversation with when you run into, you know, Liara's father, you know, pretty much on the Citadel. And if you keep walking back, you know, between them, you can hear the conversation between Liara and Matriarch. And you know this, you know, it's really, you have to go back and forth like 12 times to hear all the lines, but there's some stuff in there, but apparently it's glitched in that
it is. I can confirm this because I was already banging Caden at that point, and Etheta was all, you know, you and your girlfriend or whatever it was that she said. And I was like, really? Really? After we just had a romantic steak sandwich and a beer and Batarian shard wine or whatever? Really? You think I'm dating Liara? No! We're just friends.
I felt like they did the same thing for Ashley too in her romance. You get all this great stuff at the beginning and like during Mars and then, you know, in the hospital, and then it's hey, let's shake hands and we'll bring you back on the ship and then I'll come talk to you and it's good to see you.
All you get is a drunk conversation with her, which is pretty much, that's the only voice cutscene in the ship that you have. Everything else is just her commenting on whatever missions happened.
Really?
And then, and then you get I think at most, 1 minute goodbye with her right at the end, which is the shortest of all of the romances.
Awful. Yep. Oh my god. I mean, I at this point I have to say that I've
at least you get her to the end. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's true. I forgot to record the, because at that point I was already probably crying too much to remember. I forgot to record the final conversation between my femme Shep and Caden in London.
I didn't even get that one. I missed it.
I'm glad that I didn't, because I don't think that I would be able to rewatch it at this point. And so I have not seen it. This is my very first playthrough, and I'm so close to that. And I just know that I'm going to be an absolute wreck when I see that again.
I was just so excited to be able to finish the game that I totally blazed through and I didn't even talk to any of my friends. And then by the time I didn't even get like the final goodbye scene from anyone. God. I was just like, okay, awesome, let's go do this. Hey, wasn't I supposed to have? Okay, we're running for the beacon. Okay, we're doing that.
I was bawling, and I just can't even. Oh my! I can't even think about this right now. I'm gonna get all choked up about this. But my god, I mean, like, you know, again, like the voice acting is just and the animations are just
You know the Shepard and Garrus one. Even if you don't romance Garrus, is a very good scene because they have a conversation where there's no, you know, they say there's no Shepard without Garrus. And it's a really, really good scene between the two of them, even if you don't have the romance, that solidifies that relationship and that friendship. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just perfectly done, yeah, when it's going into, you know, that end scene when you know, all right, shit's happening, you know, mm-hmm. we all better say goodbye. And it's just really lovely. And in even the end scene saying, you know, I get teary with it as well, and it's Garrus, and I don't particularly like Garrus, but it's a fantastic scene.
But in the Caden romance scene, like
what I particularly love, I guess, about Caden's development in Mass Effect 3 is that you really see him grow as a character from being so reticent in Mass Effect 1 and being unable to more reserved in talking about his feelings, and then in Mass Effect 3 he's still Caden, but he's just a bit more open. And one of I think Sparge's, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, one of his finer VA moments comes right after a sanctuary on Horizon, and he's seen what Henry Lawson has been putting refugees through. And if you talk with him after that mission, you can tell he's just seething, and he's trying to put it in so much. And I was just in awe at that voice acting. But even some of the, I guess, lines that seemed a bit more awkward, Sparge just made them work. And I can't gush enough about his
voice. I think he just did such an absolutely phenomenal job. I mean, during the London scene, you know, you have, obviously spoilers for the romance, but, you know, you have Shepard going to talk to Caden, and he has this moment where, you know, he is clearly not really sure that you're going to make it, and then, you know, he's standing all choked up, and he's all, I'm going to fight like hell to hold you in my arms again, and Shepard is clearly choked up as well, and then she starts to walk away, and the animation is just done so beautifully, and the animation and the quality of the voice acting is just absolutely heart-wrenching, where he reaches out, and he, like, grabs, you know, like, puts his arm around her waist and pulls her back, and they kiss, and I just have this horrific, that is, like, the first moment where I just had this horrible sinking feeling that there was a serious possibility that my Shepard might not make it out, and that was just absolutely heart-wrenching.
I almost had tears in my eyes. It left me, that moment left me choked up.
I was already crying. And I, like, cried for probably at least, like, an hour after I finished the game. And I reloaded every ending. And I was like, oh, this can't be happening. This is not happening. There's got to be one ending where I actually make it out alive. Because I never got the, you know, the thingy where if your EMS is over a certain score, you get that one final scene after the destroy ending. But... Yeah. Oh my god! I mean, I have never had such a visceral reaction of grief to probably any kind of media, and especially not to a video game, as I have had to Mass Effect. I had seriously, like, lost my appetite as I was playing the game, and things got more and more emotionally engaging. And I mean, I even, like, lost some weight because I just was too busy lying on my couch, like, curled up in the fetal position crying, and I just had no appetite, and I was just, like, too distraught to think about basic things like food.
All right, we are at the 2-hour mark now for our podcast, so
maybe we should do part two.
let's talk about the endings, wrap this up. I know this is the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about, so... Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna start off here. I've tried really hard to sort of convince myself that this is, but it was a pretty good ending, you know, no matter what you chose, and, you know, it was interesting, and it was smart, and it blah, 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 you know, I hate it. I hate it. I'm angry.
Yeah.
I hate it. It really does come down to pick a color, any color, but the color doesn't matter, because it's all the same ending. It's all the same ending and all the same things happen. And, you know, I really feel like, do you know that the Better Business Bureau or whatever, they agreed with the consumers that it was a falsely advertised product. And, you know, for a little while there, I was like, this is crazy, this whole Take Back Mass Effect thing, and this whole, like, you guys are being ridiculous with this kind of stuff. But the more I think about it, and the more I think about it, the angrier I get, because it's really, like, for years you've been promising this epic story where all of these choices mattered, and, you know, like, different endings, and you know, and there is, like, zero personalization. There's no actual playable content within any confines of the ending there. There is maybe one dialogue option, but you're really just taken out of it, and you're watching one long cutscene forever, and then you make your eeny, meeny, miny bullshit, and then you're done. And then there's way too many questions. There's too many questions, and none of them are good ones. None of them are like, oh, but no, you just need to think about it more because it's, you know, it's
right, exactly.
No, it's like bad writing or badly put together. If I have questions like, how did this person get on this ship when they were just with me, you know, doing this thing, and, like, where am I now, and what is going on? Like, that's... You know, my flag really went off when everybody started grumbling about the leaked endings, and all Mac Walters, the lead writer, had to say about it was, remember, guys, it's the journey, not the destination. And I felt, wow, that is such a hack writer thing to say. Like, as much as I really think he's a great talent, and I think, you know, all of the writers are amazing, I thought, way to set yourself up for what you already know is going to be a huge disappointment. Because while the scenic drive might be beautiful, it's kind of ruined if you drive off a cliff and land into a pile of then explodes into a fiery, you know, like, explosion.
That's beautifully put.
And, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I felt. And I just felt, I've been in denial about the endings, really. It's not that I even need a happy ending. I just need fucking, what
more
is this?
Yeah.
What is this?
I mean, what I had seen was what I had been led to believe, I guess, because I saw this accidentally. What I had been convinced were spoilers was that there was an ending where the Reapers would win and the, you know, Shepard would win and everyone would be fine, and one where Shepard would die, but you would still be able to save everyone. Those were the three sort of main endings that, at the point where I started playing the game, I believed were possible. And so then to figure out that that was actually not the case at all was really horrible. And, I mean, I you know, foolishly probably just held out hope after I played my first ending, where at that point I was just sort of too, you know, I just didn't even know anymore what I was doing. So I just blindly ran out of color. I was like, okay, that one. And then, you know, all the cutscene. And I was like, oh my god, that did not just happen. And I reloaded and I ran out of different color and I was like, what? And then I just had this horrific feeling of, oh my god, I'm going to run at this next color and the exact same thing is going to happen. And then I reloaded and I ran at the other color and basically the exact same thing happened. And I just was so, so absolutely horrified and disgusted. And I thought it was terrible. And also, you know, I just had this incredibly emotional, heartfelt goodbye to all of my teammates in London. And, you know, now they're all looking just fine and dandy, stepping off the Normandy, and Caden's all like, lol, what's this nice green planet? And it's like, okay, no, that's great, because we just had this super emotional goodbye, and you were going to fight like hell to be back at my side, and now I'm probably dead. And you're just like, oh, hey, pretty trees. It's like, wow, thanks a lot.
Turns out
that we had this super emotional connection.
Turns out fight like hell means get on a ship and hightail it the fuck out of there.
Yeah, and quickly, like, showered and probably in a nice clean new uniform while I'm dying on the Citadel or whatever. So anyway, you know, then of course I discovered the indoctrination theory shortly afterwards.
Which still is bullshit because people had to come up with it. And
yeah, I really hope it's true at this point, obviously with the extended cuts and their whole statements about how they're not going to revise the endings, they're just going to add more information about them. I think they could probably kind of, you know, mess around to incorporate some of those elements, but as far, at least at this point, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Shepard was never actually on the Citadel. She had, you know, the elusive man represent, you know, the whole, obviously, you know, if anybody...
Right, I mean, I think we're supposed to determine that this is all kind of in her head at some point.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But it's not like there's any confirmation of that whatsoever. And if it is, then nothing ended.
Right, exactly. And you're back in London, buried in rubble, and who knows what's going on. But
and I guess the Reapers win?
But, you know, as much as everybody poo-poos all the endings, and this sounds really bad, and I'm probably showing how much I detest Joker, but I choose a destroy ending, which basically says that you get rid of all synthetic life in the universe. So I just think it's the ultimate, like, middle finger to Joker to be all, I'm going to get you together with your synthetic girlfriend, and then, oh, sorry, she's dead.
Well, but then you're also destroying all the Geth and, you know, everything like that. I also chose destroy.
I chose destroy
because I thought that's what I came here to do. And I'm sorry, why am I listening to the God Kid again? Yeah. What? Oh, you're obviously not lying to me.
Yeah, I mean,
at all.
between following Anderson and following the Elusive Man, fuck no, I am not following the Elusive Man. I am following Anderson, and if we're going to die side by side, and he's going to have that incredibly moving speech with the sad music playing in the background that I can't even listen to without tearing up, I am still going to follow Anderson and choose the Destroy ending. And that is that.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Even if I don't have the EMS to theoretically survive.
Micah, what ending did you... What did you get?
I did the merging synthetic people thing because I actually really like Joker, and I kind of wanted him to, like, have... At least if somebody was going to have a good ending, at least it would be the dude who made me chuckle a few times with, like, his girlfriend, and I was like, all right, well, good for them. They're going to
well, and also
whatever it is they do, however they do it. And I was like, all right, go
you know,
for
and
it.
Also the Geth, you know, like...
Yeah, and I'm not the Geth, too. I don't know. I'm, yeah. I like machines.
I feel like, in general, the synthesis ending might even be, like, the right way to go, but then comes the whole...
Yeah.
Issue, like... Really? So that's what you're trying to achieve with all this horrible genocide and, you know,
yeah,
like...
exactly.
No, dude, I'm sorry, I'm gonna blow your asses to hell! What the hell?
Yeah.
Synthesis is actually the first one that I chose, and, you know, then after I actually realized what I had done, and I thought about it some more, you're still basically just forcing this on every life form.
On everybody, yeah.
And yeah, so that, to me, is still not... I mean, it's certainly, I mean, I guess it's better than, oh, I don't know, it's just so morally ambiguous. I just really can't decide what's better, except for,
You're destroying all the guests, so it's like, everyone, and everybody would get to stay alive, or I could, you know, destroy all the guests, which I spent that whole Legion era, like, quest trying to help these guys, and like it's like, well, I kind of don't want to screw up everything I just kind of did right now.
Right, so. And I was able to make peace with between the guests and the Quarians, and so then choosing the Destroy ending sucked. But then on the other hand, is if choosing the Destroy ending means that, you know, next 50,000 years or whatever, there's not going to be any Reapers around, and people are going to be able to live their life. You know, even if, you know, then it's kind of like the needs out of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And at that point, you know, even though I really like the Geth and I was pleased that I was able to get them, you know, into a good situation, if it comes down to sacrificing the Geth versus forcing this choice forcing this decision on every sentient creature in the galaxy, I guess I would rather sacrifice the Geth rather than making everyone into some kind of odd cyborg. Plus, I mean, selfishly, you know, my thoughts are, you know, synthesis obviously also meaning Shepard sacrificing themselves.
Yeah.
Which is probably more of a reason behind that.
Did anybody here choose control?
I will be choosing that for my next playthrough.
I just can't, like, look at that option and be like, yes, God kid, I fully believe you that if I go in there and die, I'm going to be able to control
the
Reapers. Because that makes complete scientific sense.
I didn't like that at all.
No, I don't have any questions about it whatsoever. I don't need to ask you anything. I'm just going to take your word for it. So I'm just going to go over there because, you know.
Didn't you just jump into Lot and that's how it, like, I'm going to go and jump into some Lot.
There's a big part on Lot Shepard getting all sort of huskified looking.
Yep, disintegrating.
Yeah,
it's pretty awful.
The reason why I chose it is, I guess when I was... I read the leaked files, admittedly, but that was before I knew that it would just be reduced even further to color choice.
Right.
When I was playing ME2, and then I was thinking about what the endings for ME3 might be, I thought there probably might be an option to control the Reapers. There might be an option to destroy the Reapers, or some sort of other repercussions. So with the shepherd that I'm playing now, he's actually quite pro-Cerberus and quite lionizes the elusive man. So I just pretend that the negative dialogue with him doesn't exist. I don't know. But so the reason why he's going to choose that is because to him it's not really a wholly bad idea. Control the Reaper, stop them from coming back and destroying the cycle. Well, why not?
That would be great if I believed it for a second.
Yeah. And also I would just really question
the whole
being corrupted by, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Oh yeah, no, totally. I'm not saying
I can certainly see why you know,
there but people are blinded by hope and power, right? Or they think that what they're doing is the right thing. So I don't know, just Shepard sacrificing himself to maybe save his people and control the Reapers, and maybe it's a lost cause, but I'm not going to say that the endings fully make sense, but I guess that's just what I was thinking about when I was trying to make this character or something.
I always wondered that. Yeah, I always wondered whatever happened, and I know they dropped it, but I would have liked to have seen how that whole dark matter energy thing was going to come into play.
Oh, God, I wish.
Because there was all of that stuff in Mass Effect 2, and everybody was focused on dark matter energy, you know, and then it just didn't go anywhere in 3. They must have decided that wasn't feasible or whatever, but I would have actually liked to have seen how that actually played
part.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be a big deal. I love it. That was the whole reason that I liked Mass Effect in the first place, and the first reason that I played it. I mean, not the dark matter, but the fact that it was in space, and, like, you know, going through all of that and dealing with, like, energy time travel, you know, like, universe travel and all that sort of thing. I mean, the space idea of it, and, like, expanding on dark matter would have been, like, really awesome, because that really plays into the whole space and, you know, the universe and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they had it all, and then they got rid of it for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, they
had
there
it
was
set
a
up
cult
to do that, and then they changed it.
Have seen rumored is that was sort of scrapped around the time that Karpyshyn
left
Steam,
yeah.
or shortly afterwards, possibly. And, I mean, you know, it's obviously hard to judge, and the internet is full of rumors, but it does seem as though the dark energy thing, and I know there's that anonymous blog post that's been attributed to Patrick Weeks, even though he's denied that was actually him posting. I mean,
however, if you read it, it was really very, like,
it's very convincing, and I personally would have been a lot happier if what that poster had described had occurred, you know, as opposed to the endings that we did get.
And I feel like maybe that's what they're gonna kind of
so absolutely fine with that.
I feel like that there's going to be some more of that in this extended cut that they're doing, which, and don't get me wrong, as angry as I am about the ending, I really feel like BioWare had no idea that this ending was going to be so poorly received.
Yeah.
And I think they're really trying to make good on it. And try to make it, like, make more sense or make their... I mean, they didn't have to make this extended cut. They could have just said, this is what we did, get over it, and been jerks about it. But, you know, they want us to be happy. Obviously.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And a lot of fans are not very respectful at all. I just have to say that I really appreciate what BioWare has done to, you know, kind of, well, I don't really want to say placate, because I feel that's not entirely the appropriate term.
I'm glad they're not changing the ending, because I would have felt like
I could have lived with them changing the ending, but I definitely would also it. At the same time understand why that was setting a really bad precedent.
Yeah, I just don't like the idea of them changing the ending based on fan feedback or anything like that.
Right.
And at the PAX panel, they were saying somebody asked them about indoctrination theory, and they won't comment on it. They don't want to say, well, that's, you know, a good theory, or that's sound, or that's what it is, or anything like that, because, you know, and I get that. They don't want to impose that, you know, but at some point, when you've written this entire game, maybe you should start imposing some ideas, because this ending had no ideas whatsoever. It was just like, vague imagery! Everybody!
That's what blows me away. Is that, you know, that, like, all these very, very smart people, you know, like Casey Hudson and Mike Walters, and, like, they are brilliant people who didn't get to their positions by accident, and they all sat in a room, and they all watched those endings play out, and they all said, yep, we did it, thumbs up, ship it. Like, they actually thought,
ship it.
they thought that we were going to love it, and, like, that's what shocks me the most. They spent the first two games building up this sense in players that Shepard could do anything. You know, she climbs out of the rubble at the end of the first game, and, you know, she survives the suicide mission at the end of the second game, and you go into this third game thinking, if I do everything right, if I play perfectly, I'll be able to pull off another miracle. And you don't.
Yeah.
You can't do it a third time, and you're left with this sudden shift of perspective. You know, like it's always about Shepard. The story is always about Shepard until the very end. And at the very end, you're not supposed to really care what happens about Shepard anymore. You're supposed to care about the galaxy. You know, civilizations will endure.
It is
It is a happy ending as long as you don't care about your Shepard.
Yeah,
you know, I just spent 100 hours on my Shepard, and at the very end, I'm supposed to just forget about her, and feel good that, you know, civilization will endure. You know, no, you know that goes against everything that you've done up until that point.
I feel like 99.9% of this game was pure masterpiece, and then the end was just like a giant. Like, it's so sad because there's this amazing game, an amazing story, and amazing characters, amazing writing, and all this stuff, and then so much of it has just been so, the ending aspect, and the controversy, and the everything has overshadowed the fact that this is an amazing game, you know, because it's your ending. Like, you just made this, and your pants.
I mean, that's what we've spent all these years waiting for, you know, the fact that it was a trilogy, you know, and that was what it ended with, I think, was really disappointing.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily want a full happy ending, but I certainly wanted the option to have it if I made all the right choices. And I really just wanted to see that variety. And I guess I'll talk about I'll just mention Dragon Age and their epilogues. We either have the three choices to destroy the Darkspawn, or there's Morgan's demon child, or we can choose either Logan or Alistair to sacrifice his or herself. So we have those options, but then at the end, we see how our choices have affected Thedas or Ferelden. And so we can talk with our team members, we can get that closure, but then we see the epilogues and just how Thedas was changed because of our choices, like what happened to the dwarves in Orzammar, what happened to the Circle of Magi, and just in that epilogue, we were able to get so many consequences in a way that I felt Mass Effect 3 failed to accomplish.
Yeah.
And I guess regarding the dark energy part of the story, in development changes, endings change, and plans change, I think we can accept that. It just seems like something that was so good was replaced with something so inferior. And I've heard it said that the ending itself was based on some fan mail from a grade 7 kid in Germany. He sent this idea to BioWare, and then they ended up using it to an extent.
What?
That could be wrong, though.
That kid's a jerk.
Let's go wait up for him after school.
Meet me by the flagpole.
Oh, wow.
All right, guys. Does anybody have any closing comments about the ending of the game or anything that you feel like you may have missed? Because we're going to have to wrap it up here. And
Yes, I've got one.
Okay.
I've got one. Me.
Got one, too. Fantastic.
I can't possibly give Mass Effect 3 a 10 out of 10 because there was no Gianna Parisini in the third. No mention at all. She owed me another beer because I didn't finish the second one that she gave me because that was dodgy. And so it'll never get a 10 from me, BioWare. You should have told that kid, that 7-year-old kid, that you should have mentioned Gianna because she's important to the game.
Yeah, I guess my general comment is that no matter how upsetting personally for me the ending was, the and I just feel like I'm repeating the BioWare party line. The journey there for me was very fulfilling and emotional, and I mean I absolutely loved the game until I got to the very ending and I realized that no matter what I did, there was no way for me to save my shepherd and have her reunite and have her happily ever after. And also, I have to say that I absolutely had this brief moment where, even though I was absolutely ridiculous, but I'm ridiculous fan of the girl like that in the Caden romance scene, like right before the love scene thing, where he kind of like shifts on the couch, and I thought, oh my god, he's gonna propose to Shepard! And then of course, I just had this moment where I was, you know, I never would have expected that to happen, except then he kind of moved, and I thought, oh my god, it's gonna happen! And then it didn't happen. And so that was kind of sad.
I don't get it. Is the ring in the whiskey bottle?
Where he moves and he, like, looks off to the side and he's all like, it's going to be what it is. And he's just like, or no, wait, to be more specific, it's right when he goes, when he, like, kind of, like, looks down and he's like, I lied, I didn't come here for just a drink. He catches Jess, and right then is exactly when I thought that he was going to propose. And then he didn't propose. I was like, oh, god damn it! Even though I never really thought of, you know, him proposing to Shepard was something that I necessarily wanted from my Shepard. But, that, you know, I, like, didn't realize, I guess, how much I secretly wanted that until it actually did not happen.
We all have to stop the podcast now because Kim's just going to go and watch Mass Effect fanfiction. About this.
We need an entire podcast of just Kim about talking Kaden. About it.
Oh, yes.
Can I do a favorite?
Absolutely.
Kaden cast.
Kaden cast.
Yes, please.
Probiotic kick.
He could be in, Raphael Sparks does those audio blogs. Can we invite him?
We can totally invite him to be on this.
Oh my god, you have no idea. Oh my god.
Kim, we're going to have to medicate you.
Anyway, to...
But Micah, you do have any final thoughts on Mass Effect?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought, you know, I have to say the same thing about the ending. I didn't much care for the different colored ending thing they had going on, but... I thought it was really great. It was actually one of the games that really got me into RPG, like, you know, without MM part to it. So, and I wish Thane would have lived, but there's my happily ever after, I suppose. I mean, I get that he died, but, you know. Go Drell or something.
That was pretty awesome, the whole Kai Leng thing, and you could be like, that was for Thane, you bastard.
Oh, I did love that.
When it ever died, it was like extra awe, but it was just like, oh, I just want to kill you again. I'm glad you're dead.
That's the one renegade option that I always pick. Even though my John's very much Paragon, I always pick that renegade option.
Oh, me too.
Totally.
You have to.
Really.
It's so much better than just... I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, except you have better reflexes if you choose Renegade Interrupt. Okay, so if you are still listening to this, anybody who would be listening to this podcast later on, then please be our best friend, because this has gone on so long that I'm not even sure. We might have to do it in two parts. But
oh, I would so be up for that. I'm sure we could fill.
No,
it
I mean, I'd put this one into two.
Oh,
but we can do another one about maybe characters or something.
My original statement. You know that we could fill another 2.5 hours talking.
We absolutely could. We've all talked for days and days and days about the Mass Effect world, but I do have to stop hitting the record button at some time, and then so thank you, everybody, for coming to episode 2. It feels weird saying that when nobody's actually listening live. And thank you, Joe and Keller and Micah and Kim for being here again, and Tosh, as always, always being.
Don't thank me or anything. I'm just the schmuck who's here all the time.
You're like the host. All right, guys. We're going to sign off now. So everybody say your goodbyes, and we will head off.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks a lot.